is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for tuning in once again. It is Monday. We've done it again. We've squandered an entirely perfect weekend, and here we are back again once together. Oh, my gosh. Appreciate you guys all being in the chat room this morning. It's so nice to tune in to the chat room and see a whole crowd of people in there already. A lot of familiar faces. Can't thank you guys enough for being in there. I got to give you a heads up right now. It's Monday. This daylight savings time thing has like completely warped my brain. I don't know what's going on, but I've got the dumb today, ladies and gentlemen. I cannot brain. I've been trying to brain all morning and it hasn't been panning out. So just kind of throwing that out there that I have the dumb today. Does anybody else have the dumb as a result of daylight savings time today? I'll tell you, the birds this morning were up, I think at around 2:30 or so, and they were like having some old kind of neighborhood meeting at the big old tree right outside my window. It sounded really important. I hope they resolved whatever crisis was going on at 2:30 in the morning. But in Birdland, I'll tell you what, they don't pay attention to daylight savings times. And I do have to admit, though, this whole it being light after 6 o'clock at night thing, I could get into that. I really, really like it. I really like it. That was a nice thing yesterday. Also, I got to point out just how strange it is here in Missouri. We had snow on the ground as of about Friday night. I could probably go find some snow in my yard if I went and found a shady bit. But beautiful weather all weekend, right? So snow on the ground Friday, Saturday morning, go outside. It's very nice outside. What do I see? Mosquitoes. So we went from snow to mosquitoes overnight in Missouri. And they're out already. We're at 70 degrees. I think spring has finally sprung. I hope wherever you guys are at, it is warm and wonderful. And if not, I hope it becomes that way soon. Cause I love this weather. Finally, if I can just figure out my sleep schedule and get my, circadian rhythm back on track here, then I think I'll enjoy the rest of this week. But anyway, it's going to be a big week. I really appreciate you guys showing up this morning and, appreciate you guys, promoting the show and, sharing it with your friends and family. We've got a lot of great emails. Wood went for a ride this weekend. Man, that's good news. One of the guys in the chat room and I chat about motorcycles all the time, and he's telling me he got out this weekend, and I bet that was pretty nice, man. So, hey, just as a reminder, all you cage drivers out there, the weather is getting nice. Please start paying attention. Their motorcycles are going to be back out on the streets again. So, save them, use your signals, get off your cell phone, stuff like that. Let's remember we share that road with people also. And jealous Wood that you got out this weekend, because I did not. Anyway, okay, what else is going on? Oh, probably ought to tell you guys about the guest today. Commander Dale Brown is going to be joining us. He is, in my opinion, should be the next Attorney General of the United States. Dale Brown, obviously, is the founder and the person who runs the Detroit Threat Management Center. He provides private armed security guards for different locations throughout Detroit. They have an amazing track record, and this is exactly the template that I think we need to be applying to the rest of the nation and all these goofy municipal law enforcement officers. Wow. So definitely looking forward to having Dale Brown back on the show today. He's absolutely one of our favorite guests around here, so we'll be talking to him in about an hour. So definitely stick around for that. I'm going to just jump right into the news today because there's lots of stuff going on, and I got in trouble last week because someone said I was rambling too much before the show. So from now on, you guys will have to go to redpillreports.com and check out the calendar if you guys want to know who the guests are coming up in the week, because I'm not going to tell you anymore because somebody got on my case about it last week. So there you go. Yes, I agree with Wolf too. Let's do what Iceland did and arrest all the bankers. Okay, I want to talk. Obviously, Friday's show was awesome. I hope you guys enjoyed Friday's show. We had Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton on, and it was just a free-for-all. We tried to go over all kinds of news. They taught me a lot of stuff. I think I taught them some things. It was just great, just absolutely fantastic show. But we didn't get nearly as in-depth into some of the pertinent news that was going on, and I didn't really get a chance to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about Iran this morning, just because – we talked a little bit about it last week with Aaron and Melissa, and they were kind of out of the loop on some of the stuff that was going on. And obviously, on the back of Netanyahu coming and doing this big speech, there's been a lot of Iran's in the news right now, well, big time in the news. We had the speech, which obviously Netanyahu was trying to use to make Iran look really, really bad. He actually said at one point during this at one point during his speech that the fact that Iran was in Iraq, you know, Iran sent some special forces into Iraq to help Iraq and their militia of about 30,000 people total get ISIS out of Tikrit. And so Netanyahu during a speech said that was a clear example of Iran trying to take over the entire region. And I mean, for those of us who watched the prisoner transfer take, you know, place between an Iraq and Iran, and those of us that are aware that Iraq actually paid Iran to be there, we know how just absolutely ridiculous that is. But anyway, there's just so much going on between this Netanyahu and Obama situation, and I really want to just talk about this for a second. Ralph Nader actually came out and did a really, really fantastic, little comment about Netanyahu's speech, and I want to read this. I don't know how you guys feel about Mr. Ralph Nader. I know there's probably a lot of Mopar guys out there that probably are not a huge fan, because of course Ralph Nader, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't all have seatbelts in our cars. But it'd be difficult to say that he doesn't at least stand up for what he believes in, and so anyway. This is what he had to say about Netanyahu's speech, and I think this is pretty poignant, so I wanted to bring this up today. He says, apart from inadvertently making the case for equal time by his Israeli pre-election opposition, the spectacle of Benjamin Netanyahu's wild diatribe at the joint session of Congress amidst the feral cheers of his congressional yahoos will be remembered as a textbook case of propaganda unhinged from reality. Starting from his preposterous premise that Iran, a poor country of 77 million people with an economy nearly the size of Massachusetts, is planning a caliphate to conquer the world, Mr. Netanyahu built his case on belligerent words by Iranian leaders who believe that they are responding to Israeli belligerence backed by its ultra-modern U.S.-equipped military machine and its repeated threats of preemptive attacks against Tehran. Unwilling, unlike his Israeli opponents, to subject himself to questions before congressional committees, this three-time soliloquist at joint congressional sessions, 96, 2011, and 2015, was received with hoopla quite different from his reception at a much more critical Knesset. The prime minister's 42-minute speech was punctuated by 23 standing ovations and sitting applause that took up 10 minutes. The U.S.-Israeli lobby has made Congress a rubber stamp for lopsided policies in the Middle East, and only about 50 Democrats boycotted this address. Here's where it gets juicy. He says, it is if Israel doesn't frighten Iran with its 200 nuclear weapons and its rejection of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, whose international inspections are required for all other signatory nations on Earth, including Iran. It is if Israel has not threatened Iran with annihilation, sent spies to sabotage and slay Iranian scientists, and worked with its Arab allies to undermine the Iranian regime. It's as if Iranians do not remember that the United States overthrew their popularly elected Prime Minister Mossadegh back in 1953 to reinstate the Shah's dictatorship for 26 years. It is if the Iranians do not mourn the loss of hundreds of thousands of soldiers and civilians killed by Saddam Hussein's brutal invasion of their country from 1980 until 1988 with the military, intelligence, and diplomatic support of the United States. It is as if Iranians are not frightened into thinking that they are next when George Bush names Iran as part of the axis of evil along with Iraq and North Korea, and proceeded to destroy Iraq and surround Iran with U.S. armed forces that are still in place to this day. It is if the Iranian people are not suffering from economic boycotts, which by impacting disproportionately civilian health and safety there, they violate international law. It's as if Iran should accept a wide sphere of influence by the United States and not try to expand its sphere of influence for its own defense. It is as if Iran had not proposed a serious plan to George W. Bush over 10 years ago to settle disputes and establish a nuclear weapons-free zone in the Middle East, which Mr. Bush completely ignored. It is as if Iran is not, in the words of former advisor to Obama, Vali Nasir, carrying quote-unquote most of the weight in the battles on the ground against ISIS in Iraq, thereby saving the U.S. from committing again United States soldiers to avert a complete rout of those left behind by our deadly debacle in Iraq since 2003. It is as if Iran is not claiming it is building nuclear power plants for electricity, which is a foolish, dangerous move for its own people, and not building an atomic bomb, has not been in full compliance with the Geneva Interim Accord since November of 2013, with the P5 plus one countries and these parties led by the United States strive to conclude a complete agreement this year. It is as if Israel is not illegally occupied, colonized, and stolen Palestinian land and water over the decades, including regularly invading the blockaded Gaza, invading Lebanon 5 times, and attacking other nearby countries preemptively, and caused hundreds of thousands of civilian casualties. It is as if Israel, while complaining about Iranian behavior, does not continue their Palestinian policies that violate several UN resolutions while goading the U.S. towards war with Iran. It is as if the Arab League, with its 22 member nations, has not offered repeatedly since 2002 a comprehensive peace treaty in return to Israel returning to its 1967 borders that was also rejected by Israel. It is as if Iran has forgotten the shooting down of a scheduled Iranian civilian Airbus by the U.S. Navy in 1988 with a loss of 290 innocent lives, including 66 children. It is as if Iran, a country that has not invaded another country for over 250 years, should remain cool in the face of such attacks, threats, infiltrations, boycott U.S. Navy in the Persian Gulf, and not engage in any military alliances. It is as if Iran's authoritarian leaders are not preoccupied enough with pressures inside their own country that are both internally and externally driven without also planning to conquer the world. So these pop-up lawmakers in Congress on Tuesday have not shown any interest in their own government's causal responsibility for the Iranian animosities. The priority for many in Congress is marching to the drumbeat of whatever the U.S.-Israeli lobby wants from the Pentagon, the U.S. State Department, and the American taxpayers. And some members of Congress have spoken up in the past, and it should be noted that Republican Congressman Ron Paul and Paul Findlay and Senators Chuck Percy and James Aborzyk are also have all been people who have stood up and spoken out against this. So, why does such a large majority of Congress block the viewpoints and policies that could lead to peace as advocated by so many former chiefs of the Israeli security, intelligence, and military and political institutions? They have spoken up repeatedly in Israel but are never allowed to testify before congressional committees. This entrenchment of anti-Semitism on Capitol Hill against the other Israeli Jews needs to be challenged by peace and justice-loving Americans who want to avoid further blowbacks and war quagmires for our soldiers. I just wanted to read that because there are so many good points that Ralph Nader points out in this speech. I mean, this is absolutely, that is absolutely right on, you know. Ralph Nader, I'll tell you what, say what you will, Mopar guys, but that guy is on point with his, historical analysis of what's going on in Iran right now. I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that was really important. And here's another thing too. We talked about this last week with Aaron and Melissa, that there is a difference between Zionism and Judaism. And I had to say, I was thinking about this morning. And, you know, the role of the Zionists really seems to be to kind of hang their hats on the plight of the Jewish people. And I'm not trying to say that the Holocaust didn't happen. I'm not one of those revisionist, you know, people. I believe that it probably did happen. But at the same time, you've got a group of people who are using a card saying that race has been used against them, while at the same time they're saying we need to have our own state because God has declared us the master race of people. We are God's chosen people. How much more racist can you possibly be than that exact statement? And so I also believe wholeheartedly that the people who are running the country of Israel are not, you know, representative of the people there, just like the people who are running our darn country right now are not representative of me or any of the listeners out here. Okay. And just to bolster that, just to make sure people understand that exact point, 30,000 people came out into Tel Aviv over the weekend to protest Netanyahu. 30,000 people in Israel came out into Tel Aviv Square for a ginormous protest against Prime Minister Netanyahu and his election. His election's supposed to be, 8 days from now. It's on the 17th of March. So it, you know, we're not going to read about this in our news, I don't think. But again, people out there understand that there is a difference between Zionism and Judaism. And I'll tell you what, you want to create a Jewish state because there's threat for those people all around the world. Take all of those people that are Jewish, that are really, truly Jewish and want to have a peaceful nation and put them in the middle of Nebraska. Boom. Done. Solved. They're safe there. Nothing could possibly happen to them in the middle of Nebraska. There's plenty of land. Just carve out a place the same size as Israel. Boom. Move them all there. Done. Problem solved. You're welcome. Anyway, tens of thousands of people, all Israelis gathered in the Tel Aviv Square over the weekend calling for Benjamin Netanyahu to be replaced as the prime minister in the national election scheduled to be March 17th. The police didn't give any official figures, but the Israeli media itself said about 30,000 people attended the rally. And you got to think that the state-driven media there might be toning those numbers down because they seem to do that pretty often. The rally's keynote speaker was Meir Dagan. Now, Meir Dagan was a former Mossad chief. He has recently criticized Netanyahu's conduct in the news and called him, specifically speaking about Netanyahu, the person who has caused the greatest strategic damage to Israel. Now, again, this is an ex-head of Mossad coming out and saying Netanyahu's behavior has caused the most strategic damage to Israel in the last 6 years. So opinion polls right now show that Netanyahu's right-wing Likud running neck and neck with the rival Isaac Herzog, who is the head of the center-left Zionist Union. I'll tell you what, if you have any question about whether or not these people are Zionist, you could look at maybe, I don't know, the title of their political parties. When you call yourself a center-left Zionist Union and then say, we're not Zionist, well, that doesn't work in my mind space. Again, I haven't been able to brain very much today. I kind of have the dumb. I think it's because of the daylight savings. But when you call yourself the center-left Zionist Union and then say that you're not Zionist, it hurts my brain space. Netanyahu, now seeking a fourth term in office, is seen as having a slight advantage of more parliamentary allies with whom to form a coalition government. Latest polls have both of the Zionist Union and the Likud, both winning about 23 of the Knesset seats. So again, pretty much neck and neck right now. Netanyahu's focusing his campaign on security issues. So again, we'll be looking for false flags coming from Gaza. Oh wait, we had that last week when the Israeli Navy somehow intercepted a boatload of rockets that were supposedly sent by Iran to the Gaza Strip, because that totally makes sense in my mind that they would do that. But anyway, not that there's a blockade around the Gaza Strip and that all the boats are being searched when they go in. I'm sure Iran doesn't have any kind of intelligence forces that would. Anyway, okay, moving on. So anyway, Netanyahu, not necessarily as popular as the people in Congress would like you to believe that he is. Again, large rallies in Tel Aviv this weekend, hoping to replace him as prime minister, and I can't be happy enough about that. A lot of rumors also, and you guys can tell me what you think is going on with this story. Rumors, and we had the rumor last week, I think it was on Friday, that the head of Iran, the supreme leader of Iran, Khamenei, was hospitalized. There's been rumors that he's had stage 4 prostate cancer for a long time, and that rumor came out Friday that he was in the hospital again. Saturday we learned that he had died, and then on Sunday he went ahead and made a public appearance on Sunday to dismiss all these claims. So he's totally fine, unless they've got a complete, you know, perfect robot facsimile of him. He looks pretty healthy. So anyway, state television aired pictures of him on Sunday. He is 75 years old. He addressed a group of environmental officials and activists at his residence in central Tehran. He appeared to look comfortable and very healthy in the footage. So, you know, a lot of Western intelligence agencies will use rumors of a leader dying because, especially right now, if you think of where we're at in the, in this whole Iran, U.S., Netanyahu, John Kerry, you know, nuclear resolution negotiations, would be very easy to start a rumor that the supreme leader of Iran had died to kind of, A, throw that country into turmoil for a little bit. And it also then forces him to come out into public and to make a speech, which means, you know, if you're somebody who is maybe an intelligence somebody who is working in an intelligence agency, that might be a way to get somebody like this to come out, make an appearance, then you can get an accurate, you know, idea of where they are and what's going on and then begin to track them from there. So I think that that rumor came out this weekend to sort of flush the Iranian leadership out of the woodwork a little bit, which apparently was successful. And just a little background on him. Khamenei has been Iran's top leader since the death in 1989 of the Islamic Republic's founder, Ayatollah Khamenei. In September, Khamenei underwent prostate surgery, spent about a week in the hospital before being released. Iran, of course, right now is in the middle of critical negotiations with world power over its contested nuclear program, and Khamenei's health is given significant attention because it may affect the process of talks for a final nuclear accord. Khamenei has backed Iran's negotiators publicly in the talk, but also has his own set of requirements for what he wants out of any kind of deal. So that is what's going on there. Lead of the head of Iran, not dead, apparently looks to be in pretty good health there on the news program on Sunday. Okay, moving on. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has now declared that military pressure may be needed to oust Syria's President Bashar Assad. It comes as knowledge has emerged that the U.S., along with Turkey, has started training more Syrian rebels. Kerry says ultimately a combination of diplomacy and pressure will be needed to bring about a political transition. Military pressure particularly may be necessary given President Assad's reluctance to negotiate seriously. So, oh, man. Absolutely par for the course, right? Here we see the destabilization hasn't worked. We've destabilized it more. We're training rebels. We're putting them in there. We're actually using the rebels that we've got in there as a front or as a potential cover to be bombing inside of Syria. We've got Barack Obama in the news essentially saying sometimes the states don't do what we want them to do and we got to twist arms. So, I mean, this is exactly what we're watching going on in Syria right now. John Kerry toting the line here. Combination of diplomacy and pressure ultimately leading to military pressure because Assad doesn't want to negotiate. Well, Assad doesn't want to leave his country. I mean, we're talking about another sovereign country that we're attacking here. So what, you know, under what circumstances, especially given all the things that we found out recently about Hillary Clinton starting this war in Libya. I mean, this is just, it's insane. It's insane that John Kerry would have the gall to come onto television and say things like this, but that's what's going on. John Kerry continues by saying he has lost any semblance of legitimacy, here referring again to President Bashar Assad, but we have no higher priority than disrupting and defeating Daesh and other terror networks. Again, he's using Daesh as the Arabic acronym for the Islamic State. So again, we wound up ISIS. We trained all these people. They turned on us because they probably realized what we were doing in Libya, and it's all, you know, it's all connected. These people, they all communicate. And so they turned on us, and now they're all infighting inside of Syria and infighting inside of Libya, and just getting worse and worse there. So now, again, John Kerry is basically saying, well, we're going to have to use direct military pressure against Assad. We already know who is not going to support that, looking over in Russia's direction right now, probably not going to be supporting us because they weren't supportive the first time. So it's just becoming more of a quagmire, and it doesn't just stop in Syria. It doesn't just stop in Khamenei. Is that how we say Khamenei? How do we say his name? Tongue twister. Someone's giving me grief in the chat room here now. Khamenei? Khamenei. I don't know what his name is. He's got a sweet turban, though. Anyway, he's alive. We're going to go to war with Syria. Russia's not going to like that. So more quagmire. It's, you know, it's Monday. We got to get into the thick of it some more here, I guess. Some arrests have been made in the murder of Nebsov there in Russia. There were five people arrested over the weekend. One of them has already pleaded guilty. The others are not pleading guilty at this point. So we're waiting to see what's going to happen. They should be charged with the crimes officially here sometime this week. But again, one guy was arrested. No indication of, you know, they're not giving us really any kind of indication whatsoever who this guy was, what his connections were, anything like that. So mostly the story is just about how they figured it was a political killing. And so maybe during the trial we'll figure out who's been bankrolling this guy or these five guys, really, is what it comes down to. So there we'll see what's going on here right now. Okay, moving on. Let's see. Also, about 10 foreigners have disappeared in Libya after an attack by jihadist militants, according to the Czech Foreign Ministry. Officials say the foreign oil industry workers may have been taken hostage. So right now they're examining the possibility that a kidnapping has taken place. And again, this is the Czech Foreign Ministry saying this to Reuters. Ministry said the Islamic State, which has recently become a force in the country, was likely behind the raid. Among the other nationals allegedly caught in the assault. Also killed 11 guards, apparently citizens of Bangladesh and the Philippines and another unnamed African country. So again, these are foreign, foreign oil workers, foreign, labor workers there that were kidnapped in Libya over the weekend after gunmen were attacking an oil field there. So man, just more bad news all the way around. Saudi Arabia is dismissing, it's dismissing any claims that it is anti-humanitarian, essentially, right now. There's been a lot of public reaction to the international criticism over last year's sentencing of the liberal Saudi blogger who is being sentenced to 1,000 lashes and 10 years in jail for insulting Islam. The first 50 of his lashes were carried out in January, which prompted strong criticism of the kingdom's rights records in Western countries, including its laws on political and religious expression and the status of Saudi women. Just remember, these are our number one allies there in the Middle East right now. The statement said Saudi courts were independent and that the kingdom's constitution ensured the protection of human rights because it was based on Islamic Sharia law. Saudi Arabia, at the same time, emphasizes that it does not accept interference in any form in its internal affairs. So anyway, they're basically beheading a whole lot of people. They're up to 40 right now. It was 37 before the weekend. Now we're up to 40 again, beheaded there in Saudi Arabia. They'll pretty much cut your head off for just about anything, blasphemy, theft, apostasy, stuff like that. So not a good place. Also the only kingdom in the world where women are prohibited to drive. I didn't really realize that until recently. But that's true. Number one ally and number one supporter of the Clinton campaigns. Also, Saudi Arabia, loving it. But they don't want any they don't care what you guys think about whether or not whipping people in public is good or not. They don't care. It's Sharia law and that's the way it is there. So that's what's happening in Saudi Arabia over the weekend. We got to go to a 3-minute break. If you guys want to, you can go to redpillreports.com, check out the show section. You'll be able to learn a little bit more about Dale Brown, who'll be joining us in about a half an hour, and plenty of news in there as well today. So we're going to go to the 3-minute break. We'll be right back and I'm going to go have about 8 more cups of coffee and see if we can get brain functioning. Appreciate you guys being in the chat room. We'll be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hemp. HopeUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Down the rabbit hole with Popeye, Tuesday through Friday,
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you guys who are in the chat room today. Love seeing you guys in there. Absolutely makes my day. I mean, it really, really does. The whole point of this place is to have a forum so you guys can get good information and have comments back and forth with me and with the guests. It's just so cool that Chris and Cherie have done what they've done about getting this chat room up and running in the vault. Just absolutely love this radio network. I have to tell you, too, there's going to be a new show today, ladies and gentlemen, right after my show. And from now on, there's going to be a new show live every day, Monday through Friday. And it's a very good friend of mine, Mr. Roger Sales, has moved over to Truth Frequency. I'll tell you what, the hosts that are coming over to Truth Frequency right now is starting to become pretty overwhelming. The quality of the shows that are blossoming on this network, and I can't tell you how appreciative I am just to be a part of all of it. And having you guys out there, really looking forward to Roger's show coming up directly after ours today. And so you'll have live radio to listen to all day throughout the day from now on. You won't have repeats coming after my show, and I just cannot tell you how excited that makes me, especially to be followed up by someone like Roger, who is he's an expat, lives in Argentina. He's also a sovereignty expert. He's written a book called Sovereign to Surf, one of the most amazing and in-depth expose on sovereignty that is out there. So if you guys like those types of topics, and we cover some of that stuff on Red Pill Reports, but we really don't have enough time. And now you guys are going to get another show that's live directly after mine that's followed up with really somebody who is one of the most notable experts in that field that there is out there. So I definitely highly recommend that you guys just stay on Truth Frequency all day from now on. I mean, it's going to just get better and better from here on out. And if you can support the network in any way, you know, there is a little donate button on the homepage there. I would appreciate it. I'm sure all the other hosts would really appreciate it. And I'm sure Chris and Cherie would appreciate it as well. So that's my diatribe for that today. Let's jump back into the news this morning because we're still knee deep in the international stuff right now. I wanted to give a little shout out about this situation that happened up in Canada. A man from Quebec is going to be charged with obstructing border officials because he refused to give up his smartphone password. He's saying right now that he's going to be fighting this charge, but this case has raised a new legal question in Canada. Here in the United States, you are not protected if you are using your fingerprint to keep your information. So if you've got your laptop and it's got one of those fingerprint readers on it, your fingerprint is not your property, excuse me, according to the Supreme Court. So a police officer could take your finger and put it on your laptop or put it on your cell phone, if you had, you know, a real fancy cell phone that had a fingerprint reader, and they could open up your phone that way. Because again, your fingerprint is something that you leave behind. It's not intellectual property. This particular situation in Canada is unusual because he has a cell phone password, like you have a slide password or a number code or something like that. The sliding action and the number passcode, that is intellectual property here in the United States. So you cannot be forced to divulge a passcode or a finger pattern or something like that to open up your phone. So that's why we always recommend to people here at Red Pill that you always use that type of lock for your phone. But in Canada, apparently, they don't have that rule. And so this guy, his name is Alain Philippon. He is 38. He is, as I said, from Quebec. He refused to divulge his cell phone password to Canadian Border Service agencies during a custom search Monday night at Halifax Stanfield International Airport. And he had arrived from Halifax on a flight from Puerto Plata in the Dominican Republic, and he's been charged under Section 153.1 of the Customs Act for hindering or preventing border officers from performing their role under the Act. According to the CBSA, the minimum fine for the offense is $1,000 with a maximum fine of $25,000 and the possibility of a year in jail. Philippone did not want to be interviewed, but he did say that he intends to fight the charge since he considers the information on his phone to be personal. The CBSA did not say why Philippone was suggested or selected for a smartphone search. But I just wanted to bring that point up again just to get back to the point that you need to protect your phones with something other than information that you leave behind, i.e. a fingerprint or something like that. Make sure you have a passcode or a pass pattern that you can use to unlock your phone and keep it locked all the time because, yeah. I would also highly recommend, there's a great app for phones out there called Sidekick. I think it is still on Kickstarter right now, but this is an app that I really would get behind. It's going to have a national database right on your phone from the app that if you are involved with a law enforcement encounter of any kind, you can push a button. It will get you in contact with a lawyer that is right in your area and will stream in real time and record the entire interaction going right to your lawyer. It's called Sidekick. I don't know. I think they're still on Kickstarter right now, so that might be something that you guys would be interested in too and throwing them a couple of dollars because that's the kind of app I could get behind. I like those apps that just stream everything directly automatically to YouTube too. There's a couple of those out there right now as well. It's a weird situation, and I'm really talking to the UK guys out there. First of all, any of you UK guys, I wish Kev was in the room right now. What was up with the naked guy climbing out of the palace there in the UK? Naked man in his early 20s made a rope out of sheets and was climbing out of the palace or something and then ended up jumping, and it has not been in the news. There was a whole bunch of reports out immediately saying, oh, it's fake, it's fake, it's fake. And they're like, oh, look at the pictures of what the palace is supposed to look like and here's what the video looks like. Well, I'll tell you what, the video does not look fake at all. The video looks very startlingly real. And I think if I was going to try and cover it up, I would take a photo and then I would doctor it and then pretend that that doctored photo was what the actual palace was supposed to look like, right? That would be pretty easy to do. So anyway, I'm just still trying to get a little bit of insight on that particular story because Buckingham Palace, that's where it was. Yeah, upper level would have come out of, I think, Prince Andrew's room, if I'm not mistaken. And naked dude, sheets made into a rope, tied down like, you know, three stories. It's a hoax. That's what Lex is saying. Okay. Well, there's another goofy situation that happened in London over the weekend. This one's on RT. The London police responded to a security breach on the House of Commons roof. So the roof of the House of Commons, apparently, over the weekend, there was a young man up there, guys, in his early 20s. It's just weird to me. He's not up there. There's video of him. He's not up there shouting slogans or with a banner or anything. He's just kind of meandering around on the roof there. Again, Palace of Westminster, and the fire brigade and the London Ambulance Service show up to deal with this guy up there. There was a little bit of conjecture that it could have been tied into he could have been a climate activist or something like that, because there was a scene that was carried out by Greenpeace back in 2009 on that same roof, and there was also a fairly large environmental rally that went on during the day earlier on Saturday. But this guy, again, is not really drawing attention to himself. He was mostly just standing up there. He wasn't shouting slogans. He didn't have a banner or anything like that. He was just standing up there. And so how did they see him, first of all? You know, why did they send an investigating team? How did he get all the way up onto the House of Commons? There's no background, there's no story, there's nothing else coming out about it. So I don't know. I think there's a lot more stuff going on behind the scenes than we're being told about. And I think that might be one of them. Lex in the chat room is saying for sure that naked guy sneaking out of Buckingham Palace was a hoax. I don't know. Jury's out for me, brother, on that one. But if you say so, I will. I'll 50% believe you. That's where I'm at with that. I want to talk a little bit about the incredible supermoon eclipse that's coming up too. Especially this is also going out to the folks there in the UK. The spring is going to have a lot of rewards for the stargazers out there, but in Britain, you guys are going to experience the deepest solar eclipse that you guys have had in 15 years, as well as a supermoon all at the same time, and that will obviously sink the island into twilight completely for two entire hours. This is going to occur at about 8:40 GMT on March 20th. Scotland is going to have it the best, and they're going to have about 98% of the sky will be darkened compared to about 85% for the south of England. So again, best results are going to be for Scottish people. Of course, it has a lot to do with the weather. I have read pamphlets about how much rain they get in Scotland. So if there are no clouds, well, you guys should have a pretty amazing view on the 20th of March. Wanted to bring up that 20th of March thing as well on a global scale, because that's actually Nisan 1, okay? Nisan 1 is the first day of the first month of the biblical calendar. According to Jewish tradition, a solar eclipse on Nisan 1 is the sign of judgment, and it has certainly been true in the past. We talked about the four blood moons and all of this stuff going on right now, but this massive solar eclipse that's going to take place on the 20th falls directly in the middle of all four of these blood moons. Again, this is not something that happens often, so we're just kind of bringing it up. It's also more interesting the fact that the solar eclipse on March 20th, falling right in the middle, also happens to fall during the Shemitah years, another thing that we are talking a little bit about behind the scenes here at Red Pill Reports. If you want to do some research on that, Shemitah is S-H-E-M-I-T-A-H. That is, again, coming out of Jewish tradition. Not necessarily saying that it's, you know, indicative that something is going to happen. And of course, you know, I'm not necessarily somebody who is, you know, I believe that the Bible has a lot of spiritual methods. I also believe messages. That was the word I was looking for. And also I believe it's probably fairly historically accurate because it lifts a lot of the stories that it tells from, you know, a lot of ancient texts that go back even further. But if you are a believer in the Bible, or at least understand that some of those words in the Bible are pretty important, it does need to be said, you know, that in Genesis 14, when God said, let there be lights, he said, let there be lights in the firmament and the end of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. So again, we do see that coming out of the Bible, you know, indicating that the planets and sun also have a role as being indicators of things to come. So we're just kind of putting that out there again. This this eclipse happening right in the exact divided middle of these blood moons is pretty rare. A number of years ago, Pastor Biltz discovered that this series of four blood moon eclipses would occur on important biblical dates during 2014 and 2015. This kind of blood moon tetrad is very rare, and it's actually only happened seven times since the crucifixion of Jesus. So, again, very rare events that we're witnessing right now. Not necessarily saying it means anything, but it just, you know, it's not necessarily important what you and I believe, but it is important to understand what large groups of people out there believe, and large groups of people do understand that some of these signs in the sky are indicative of things to come, and it might be important to just kind of pay attention to what those people believe so we can prepare just in case those things do come to fruition. That's, I guess, exactly about as much as I want to go into that, but lots of stuff going on right now. Here's some national news. Let's jump into some national news. I'm going to wet my whistle, get some coffee going here, so if I can get some blood going to the brain. Good stuff. Okay. Central Intelligence Agency, this is some pretty big news actually, announced a sweeping reorganization, introduced a new directorate, and it's now dedicated to cyber espionage and establishing 10 new cross-directorate mission centers. So again, the CIA's new cyber division will be called the Directorate of Digital Information. The Directorate of Digital Innovation. It joins the four existing directorates, which are Support, Science and Technology, and Operations and Analysis. Under the new organization plan, Analysis is reverted to its traditional name, having been renamed Directorate of Intelligence previously, while blah, 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 blah. Okay, so anyway, large, major, major foundational shifts going on at the Central Intelligence Agency. Why is all of this going on? We're not really sure. There's a lot of conjecture out there that the CIA has been clandestinely taken over by the government, or not by the government, by the military, by the people who have taken oaths to support the Constitution. I don't know if that's true or not, but I do find it interesting that before this grand new, all-encompassing, all-sweeping reorganization of the CIA happened, all that interesting intel was coming out. And I'll tell you, looking at John Brennan when he was giving this announcement, he didn't look like he was doing it at his own behest. He kind of looked like he was being told what to do at this point. So anyway, They're establishing new mission centers, which is supposedly going to gather CIA officers from across different directorates to concentrate on specific subjects, targets, or regions. And one of the things that they're saying that they're going to do is that normally the analysts and the people who are out on the streets never actually know each other. There's the analysts that work at the agency never actually get involved with the agents out on the road. And I guess those barriers are the ones that are going to be broken down. And I think it probably has to do with a lot of illegal clandestine activity that has been going on for, I don't know, the last 40 years. I think people around the world are starting to realize what's going on. Obviously, Iraq is well informed about our continued support of ISIS. And I think people are just fed up. I think people are just fed up around the world. And I don't know what the restructuring of the CIA actually means for all of us, but it's important that that story came out. And there, you know, because it does seem to jive with some of the other intel that we're getting right now. And now, okay, the Department of Justice is preparing to charge Democratic New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez, who is now the ranking member of the Senate's Foreign Relations Committee, with corruption, according to CNN on Friday. According to the news outlet, Menendez is facing allegations that he traded his political influence for perks and favors from a top donor who was an eye doctor and a political backer. Say it isn't so. I'll tell you, if anybody's watched that show House of Cards, Jack Blood hit that thing out of the park by recommending that show the other day. Unbelievable the amount of political brokering and backstabbery that seems to be going on in Washington right now. So you really have to ask the question if Menendez, who again is the ranking member of the Senate's Foreign Relations Committee, he's not a newbie, not somebody that just showed up in Washington last week, probably has a 35-year career. So who did he piss off is basically my question, because now all of a sudden the Justice Department is turning on him. So I wonder whose feathers he rattled at the Justice Department to bring the scope over onto to his program, because apparently, you know, I don't think you would become the ranking member of the Senate's Foreign Relations Committee without having quite a lot of dirt on a lot of people. And again, if the charges are true that he's been using his political influence for perks and favors, well, that's how Washington has played. So, I mean, where's the crime here, according to the boys that he's surrounded by? It doesn't make any sense. So he must have gotten somebody upset, and they're coming after Mr. Menendez now. Take that as you want to there. Okay, moving on here. Let's see. Oh man, we talked quite a bit about this also over the weekend with Aaron and Mel. We talked about it on Friday a little bit, but State Department has now released the very first email associated with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's private email accounts. The investigative journalist Alexia O'Brien shared it with Vice News over the weekend. It wasn't very dramatic. It was mostly just a to and from Mr. Crowley, who is one of her advisors there. But again, I just want to point out that this whole concept of having private email accounts is so blatantly ridiculous. If this doesn't absolutely kill her career at this point, I don't know what could. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous that these people would be using it. What's more ridiculous is that back in, I think it was 2007, June of 2007, I found a little video here. Hillary Clinton on TV at the Take Back America conference talking about how Bushes were using private email accounts and how bad that was. So now, I mean, pot, you're black and I'm a kettle, and there you go. And then also just wanted to point out again that Aaron and Melissa did a fantastic story that not only was Mrs. Hillary Clinton hiding her emails, which makes it absolutely impossible for us to find out exactly what's going on. I'll tell you, Gowdy has now has subpoenaed all of her email stuff, the Benghazi committee, as well as the people who are looking into the IRS scandal, both of them subpoenaing and looking for FOIA requests on all of these emails that went to and from her private email server that she had built in her home. But just wanted to point out again as well that Aaron and Melissa reminded us Friday that it was during this time while she was using all of these fake email accounts and everything that she did, in fact, misplaced more than $6 billion at the State Department. It remains still to this day unaccounted for. $6 billion with a B, as in boy, that is a lot of money. Probably about as much money as you would need to start an illegal war in Libya. I would bet you could buy an illegal war someplace on the planet for $6 billion. But again, not only was she using fake email accounts that we probably will never be able to read now because they're going to be destroyed, but also lost $6 billion. So there you go. Oh, man, we've been talking quite a bit about this story as well. The threat of... Yeah, she has a right to privacy and I do not. Eric, I don't think that's true, buddy. Someone in the chat room saying that Hillary Clinton has a right to privacy and I don't. I think if you're working as a public official, I don't think, and I think there's that whole federal law about saving all of your communications. I can't remember what it's called, but I'm pretty sure it's an act. And, well, acts, you know, aren't really law, but they are, you are subject to acts if you are a citizen. And I'm pretty sure Hillary Clinton is operating as a citizen in this respect. So that, no, she does not, actually have any entitlement to privacy, nor does she have entitlement to, fake email accounts. Okay. The threat from the ATF to ban the green chip ammunition. Okay, we've been talking about this for a few days now. Apparently, the ATF was threatening to change the restrictions on, well, change the exemptions on bullets, on specifically these AR-15 green tip bullets. So I've got good news for you guys. The good news is that you guys don't have to worry about a change to the exemption law. The reason you don't have to worry about it is because the change to the exemption law actually already took place. So right now on a federal level, green tip ammunition is 1,000% illegal. You cannot own it. And I'm not just saying that. I'm saying that that's exactly what has happened. So, okay, here's what happened. On February the 13th, at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, BATF released a proposal to ban commonly used M855 green tip AR-15 ammunition under the guise of law enforcement safety. That same day, the proposal was released on a Friday of a 3-day holiday weekend. ATF opened up a shortened 30-day period for the public to submit comments about the new regulation. But it turns out that the ATF has been working on the ban of AR-15 green tip ammunition for quite some time and has already issued the ban in its new 2014 regulation guide. For reference, you can please now refer to the ATF regulation guide that comes out approximately every 10 years. When you look at the 2005 ATF regulation guide, you will see an exemption for AR-15 green tip ammunition, which means it is exempted from the definition of armor piercing and therefore legal on a federal level. When you look at the last page of the most recent ATF 2014 regulation guide, which was published in January, there is no longer an exemption for AR-15 green tip ammunition. It also goes on to say that the 2014 edition of the Federal Firearms Regulation Reference Guide contains information that will help you comply with federal laws and regulations governing the manufacture, importation, and distribution of firearms and ammunition. This edition contains new and amended statuses enacted since publication of the 2005 edition, as well as updated regulations and rules issued by the ATF. In addition to these updated materials, in response to inquiries received by the industry members, the public, and partner agencies, the 2014 edition contains additional information and amended question and answers to assist with compliance. Laws change over time, as well as the information in this guide. So therefore, ladies and gentlemen, the Office of Management and Budget must now review and approve ATF regulation guides, which, again, come out approximately every 10 years. This can take months, and changes to the regulation guide are not easily or often made. Because of the lengthy amount of time it takes for the OMB to approve a new ATF regulation guide, the ATF's comment period is just for show. ATF officials and the White House have and never did have any interest in actually listening to you or considering comments that are currently being submitted. The exemption for the ammunition in question has already been stripped out of the regulation handbook moving forward, and green tip has now been reclassified as armor piercing. I want to go ahead and do it a little aside here, say that never in the history of law enforcement has a law enforcement officer been killed by one of these rounds. Just want to go ahead and put that out there right now. Law enforcement officers not afraid of green tip ammunition. But the rules have now been changed further because local rules and regulations in different states across the country having their own armor-piercing standards based on the ATF regulations. Thousands of people are now in possession of AR-15 green-tip ammunition, have essentially been turned into felons overnight. This is not conjecture. You can go to the website. You can get this. You can download this newly released guide, and you will see that there is now no exemption. So, again, they came out and said – I'm reading. Okay. So anyway, they said they were going to have this comment period. They obviously didn't care about the comment period because it takes months to put some of these new regulation guides together. And it was already printed in January, which again is when they released this whole comment period. So no indication in the guidebook about whether that there's a grandfathering period for possession. Are they going to make manufacturers stop producing now? You know, what does it actually mean for buyers and sellers? Nobody knows. But again, a lot of these companies and a lot of, I mean, it's a national rule book. I don't know what else to say about it other than, you know, they snuck it in on us and, I don't know where we're going to go from here. Also want to talk about this, black site in Chicago. There was a huge rally about this black site in Chicago, this Home on Square, which again is, we had this article last week that the, isn't it funny how it's always another country newspaper that can break stories in our country, but The Guardian did a fantastic article last week about Home on Square, which is, of course, on the west side of Chicago, a very secretive police facility where people are sometimes taken for up to 24 hours. There's no ability to find them. They're not, you know, entered into any kind of booking system or whatever. Lawyers don't know where they are. So anyway, lots of protesters showing up. It's interesting, though, that the Chicago Police Department is still disavowing any knowledge of this facility whatsoever. Yeah, like you're going to believe that. So anyway, lots of people coming out in this weekend and a big old rally hoping that they can shut this place down. And I like that. You know, that's what we need to do. But I think this indication that we've got, you know, U.S. American black sites, that's a pretty big indication that we've gone further over the cliff than we want to go at this point. Okay, let's give a little bit of good news here right now. I've got good news, bad news, and strange news coming up next. Okay, good news is Arizona panel has now okayed gold and silver as legal tender. Phoenix, calling it a constitutionally protected right. Basically, what they're doing in Arizona is they are trying to remove the stipulations from the law that would subject you to capital gains taxes if you were to buy gold, say, low, and then it were to go up in value and you'd have to sell it. They're trying to basically make that a no-go, and they're basically going back to gold and silver being legal tender there, which is interesting because it's just so weird. You know, being involved with the truth movement for so long and talking out against the fiat currencies, to have actual elected leaders come out and say things like, when we have a fiat currency that's continually bouncing up and down relative to the price of oil and other market conditions, that puts us at risk. So we want to do this so that we can have some stability in our on our stateside market. Man, Arizona never seems to stop impressing me, I'll tell you. We got to go to a quick 3-minute break, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, Commander Dale Brown is going to be joining us here, and we'll be talking about the police state and all of the crazy stuff that's going on right now. So just keep it right here, guys. We're going to the 3-minute break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
You're listening to the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break and for all of you guys hanging out in the chat room. Cannot tell you guys how much I appreciate you guys being in there every day. It's very cool to have the format going with just an open forum so you guys can hear good news and also get some great insight from our guests that we have. We always have the best guests here at Red Pill Reports. And I'll tell you today, ladies and gentlemen, is again another high water mark. We are coming out of the gate strong this week on a Monday. And I'm not kidding when I say this. Commander Dale Brown really is one of my very favorite people on the planet. And I'm not just saying that because he happens to be listening right now and he could beat me up really easily. But he really is. I gotta tell you, I have not been more impressed with anybody else in terms of the field in which this gentleman operates. And for those of you guys who don't know, I am actively campaigning for Dale Brown to become the next Attorney General of the United States because I do think that the template that he has created there in Detroit with the Threat Management Center could be applied so easily across this nation and would save us so much drama and heartache. We just seems to be every single day we hear another story about law enforcement going crazy, and Dale Brown's institution and organization there in Detroit is just a high water mark for private law enforcement as far as I'm concerned. And I do really want to recommend everybody go check out threatmanagementcenter.com so you can get some more information about the training that Dale Brown provides to law enforcement agents there in Detroit, and as well as check out some of his track record. I mean, it's just absolutely high water mark on humanity here, ladies and gentlemen. Just for a little bit of background on him, in 1995, on the east side of Detroit, Commander Brown officially formed the VIPERS organization, which is a Violence Intervention Protective Emergency Response System, which was a bodyguard tactical training program, which emphasized the importance of mission-motivated altruistic community service. And I just love that phrase, mission-motivated altruistic community service. The organization became known for helping the community by stopping home invasions and murders that had been the problem for many, many years prior. This resulted in a better quality of life for the residents who lived in the community, and the byproduct of that, which meant that the building owners went into the black for the first time in 20 years, and the police department received accolades for a 90% reduction of violent crime and 9/11 calls. Fast forwarding to 2006, Dale Brown opened the Threat Management Center located in Detroit and began offering classes to the public as well as law enforcement officers for free. The same year, the Detroit Threat Management Center began its maritime nautical rescues, also assisting private boat owners in distress in the waterways bordering the United States and Canada. I cannot say enough, ladies and gentlemen, again about the Threat Management Center and everything that Dale has been able to accomplish. Dale Brown, Commander Dale Brown, thank you very much for joining us again on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've got a problem in this country, Dale. We actually have a lot of problems in this country, but you took it upon yourself to solve one of them in your community. And I wonder, since we do have so many new listeners and there are people out there who may not know you, If you could just kind of rewind the tape for us and give us sort of a ground floor introduction to what the Threat Management Center was and what it is today, if you would, sir.
Well, in general, it's a, first and foremost, we're a school. Mm-hmm. So we teach a self-defense system that I created. It's a blend of different styles. And what I did was I created one school you could go to that would teach you how to understand how to stand up and fight, how to fight on the ground, how to fight with a knife, a pistol, a shotgun, a rifle, and how to do so to survive and protect yourself and your family, in the case of a bodyguard, your client, and to do it legally. So what I did was I blended tactics and law. For the first time, when you went to a class, you would get a legal understanding of what you can and cannot do play by play. Legally, when should you and how should you use force to defend your life and the lives of others? And how would you legally articulate this as a civilian? And it's the first time that any martial art ever acted like there was, you know, laws. And so that's why I don't consider it a martial art or a military way, because it's not a military way.
Right.
It is a truly a survival system. And part of survival, of course, is that you should want to try to stay out of prison after you, you know, take an action, or prior to taking an action, which would be better, knowing how things will legally take place. So if you understand the law, then you're going to understand what you can and cannot do legally. And then what happened was, through actual application, actually getting out and helping people and getting out here in the world and seeing what really happens, another part developed, and that was psychology. And it turns out psychology was the biggest part of how to create a safe situation for yourself or your community or your corporation. By using psychology, you're able to understand how to read body language, how to project body language, how to understand human behavior, and how to create a path towards nonviolent outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of what we need in order to create safety has nothing to do with guns. It has nothing to do with laws. It has to do with human belief systems. If you want people to not be violent, if you want them not to do something inappropriate, create a belief system to support that, then humans will follow that. So it's, we operate, as human beings, in a psychological, plane. And everything we believe in and everything we do is based on compulsive behaviors almost. These are things that we have already been exposed to as small children that taught us a certain way of thinking and being and talking. And so these compulsive psychological norms are just part of who we are. What we want to do in terms of public safety is use that to create a positive bridge towards a nonviolent outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So psychology, law, and skill. This is the key to organization. And so it's a training. We teach school teachers. We teach police officers. We teach, most importantly, regular people how to create nonviolent outcomes by understanding how to escape, control, and immobilize threat within 3 moves or less, and how to deter, detect, and defend themselves, their families, and their communities from violent criminals.
Man, I mean, that to me seems like about as good as it can possibly be. I love the fact that you focus on psychology, because that to me, you know, and you're making a division between this reactive versus proactive situation, and giving people the tools that they need to actually go out and deal with situations as they present themselves. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your experience, because I know that it's been a pretty long 2 decades, has it not? I mean, there was a portion of this time where it was basically just you out there doing all of this, and I'm wondering if you could just talk to the listeners about how that transition took place between where you decided, hey, I'm going to take my experience and isolate this problem and then become proactive about it, but then also talk about how you decided to create, you know, the organization and a template and where you are now, because I really want people to understand what the steps are and how we can get this template applied nationwide, if you would, sir.
Well, you know, what I did was I took the long road, because I came from an ultra-violent background. Being an airborne paratrooper, studying martial arts since I was a kid, my mother being a firearms instructor, taking us shooting as small children in elementary school. She was also in the military. She was a National Guard firearms instructor. So I have a background in violence training.
Okay.
And so when I first started dealing with violent criminals here in Detroit, around the area that I was living in, I just always thought ultra violent. How could I be, you know, just the best at violence?
Right.
So it started as a kid just training. So clearly, you know, I'm going to have some definite advantages off of a primally violent person because my skill set is so far developed that I'll be always ahead of them. And I was, so I was dominating them physically in violence. And it turns out that in America, one of the things you don't want to do if you own anything is put your hands on someone. That will get you sued under almost all conditions. So even if you win the criminal fight, meaning you're not legally wrong, you still lose your money. Then I always say this to people, would you rather get beat up and go home
yes.
than win the fight and go to jail
yes.
or prison or lose all of your money? If someone said, listen, you have a choice. You can either get beat up, fall on the ground, and go home, or you can win the fight, go to prison for a few years, or you get to go home and then lose, you know, 10 years of your wages.
Right.
Yeah, about that. So here's the thing. Being smarter than your situation is very important. Mm-hmm. So going back to when I started, I just started with a dog and a rifle. I had no money. And I just wanted to teach, and it turns out that the local gang members wouldn't let me do that. So I had to shut my little school down, 500 square foot school, and thugs stole my car. I had no car. so that meant I was full time.
Right.
I was totally engaged. I had no, I was totally focused. I had nothing to take away my focus since I had no car. No money, running a budget of negative $600 a month.
Wow.
I had to feed a dog and a fiance at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was no way I would have thought that it ever could have evolved to the point that it's at now. It's, first of all, what I thought when I saw that, law enforcement officers were not willing to arrive in a timely fashion to situations which were extremely violent and fluid and aggressive. And then when I found out that law enforcement officers would often leave or they would not engage or not create safety in a rapid time frame, I thought I was going to die because I was by myself.
Right.
And the police were either A, not showing up, or B, not doing anything, or C, leaving while there was violence taking place here in mm-hmm. Detroit. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, there's no way kids can thrive in a place like this when there's no one here to protect them. And it didn't occur to me, but, you know, I grew up in a college town out in the suburbs. I didn't know, you know, we didn't need police at home, right? I never saw any police around.
Right.
But it turns out police are reactionary. They come around once a problem has happened and it's already over. And if you think about it, that's not really that helpful in a situation of fluid violence.
That's right.
Someone comes to hurt you, an ex, family member, ex, employee, a neighbor, a strange criminal. It doesn't matter what it is. You're not really going to get anyone there ahead of time to keep you from being killed.
Right.
You can think of our organization as the opposite of reactive. We are proactive.
Uh-huh.
And then to keep it from escalating, we use psychology in order to de-escalate the situation by understanding protective proximics, how you stand, the distance you stand, how you get in position to biomechanically dominate someone. Even if they're armed, you're able to dominate them, take control of them, and not injure them. And that's what we specialize in now. That's uh-huh. been many years, though. There was quite an evolution that took place over the years. And now, although I'm a firearms instructor, a firearms enthusiast, I have many guns and I have the best guns that money can buy. I love my guns. If my guns were, cars, they'd be Lamborghinis and Bentleys. They're custom. I mean, very expensive. They're so expensive you wouldn't want to shoot criminals with them.
Right. Roger that.
But, you know, it turns out that just because I love firearms and I'm a firearms instructor and I teach close quarters tactics, and I've used close quarters tactics. It doesn't mean that that guns are for safety. The reality is, if guns were primarily needed for safety, Secret Service would have used one at least once by now.
Right.
The Israeli Mossad lost their prime minister surrounded by the Mossad.
And they didn't shoot back.
No.
Right.
You're right. Why is that? Because guns don't, they're not good at force-on-force, conflict. You know, police officers, 9 out of 10 of them will never ever use their gun, shooting it.
Right.
On the job. They'll point it at people. They'll do other things, but they're not going to actually shoot people with the gun. So what does that break down to? Well, I just watched the story about a police chief that, needs some investigation on the internet. A police chief shot himself twice now. Another police chief just shot his wife in the head while they were sleeping.
Accidentally.
Yeah.
His weapon was on the counter and went off accidentally twice and shot his ex-wife. Yeah.
Another police chief shot himself twice. Imagine that. In two separate incidents.
Right.
So, right? I mean, right. Years apart. Like, he shot himself and then shot himself again. And it was the last time he shot himself was in a store in front of a bunch of witnesses.
Oh my gosh.
And, then another case, let's see. So they did an investigation, this story I was looking at. Across this country, there were many different cases. You could say hundreds where officers have shot themselves on the job as police officers.
Right.
So what's that tell you? That tells me if some of those shootings, which they're saying is now at 100% explainable of the unarmed African-American boys.
Mm-hmm.
I think at least half of them are probably just accidents. They're not even, and then they fix them by just keep shooting. There's like, well, let me finish this.
Oh, right.
I think that a lot of them are just, you know, poor gun handling.
Hmm.
You know, somebody doesn't go over and watch you and keep you from biomechanically making mistakes. You will, you know, absolutely grab the gun and grab your weapon and your finger goes to the trigger and you'll accidentally shoot the gun.
Right.
It's a common occurrence.
Well, let's talk about your track record then. I mean, have you had to discharge your weapon since you have been working, you know, with either as a home protector there or with any of your crew out there or anything like that?
Yes. We early on, I remember I thought the gun was the answer. I thought fighting and violence was the answer.
Right.
So basically everything you could ever do, I'd had to do. And some creative things you never thought of doing.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was that was the answer. You know, the truth is, if I go back in time, if I knew then what I know now, I could have stopped all of our shootings. I just didn't think that way. I thought violence and superior violence was the key.
Right.
But the truth is, if you stabilize the belief in violence and you create a bridge for someone, three guys are attempting to break into a house near my home. And, at first, it looks like they're just knocking on the door, and it turns out they're actually apparently breaking in or attempting to do so.
Okay.
I made the call 911 so that I'm not a vigilante. We always call police before we take any action.
Mm-hmm.
It's been the rule for 20 years. We never do anything without calling the police first. This has resulted in a few times, where officers were effectively able to assist us, but 9 out of 10 times the police either A, aren't there at the time of the incident in a timely fashion,
right,
or B, the officers don't see the relevance in the call. We for years now have been able to solve these issues and make the evolution from extreme violence to peace. But the way I did it was by thinking differently. And one of the impetuses for thinking differently was I have no immunity. And so, in a situation, I'm sorry. But,
oh, is it meaning that you're accountable for all of your actions?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm even accountable for the perception of them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So how they're perceived has everything to do with the reality. Perception is reality.
That's right.
So, you know, I have to make sure that people know that we're the good guys, don't just know it ourselves.
Right.
Cause them not knowing determines what they can do and not do. And, if you don't understand that, that's how people get confused, right? So they're taking actions without understanding that psychology is everything. How people believe, what they think is more important than what you think.
That's right.
For law enforcement, it's completely different. They're not concerned with what other people think as a group. They're concerned with what they think. I fear you. I think, you're doing something. I feel as though you're causing me fear for whatever reason. It doesn't matter what it is. One guy says, a police officer pulls him over at a gas station. He says, go get your wallet. The guy wants to hurry up and do what the cop says. So he runs to get the wallet.
Right.
And as soon as he does, the cop unloads on him, shoots him four times, and the guy lives. And the guy says, why are you shooting me? You can hear it on the report.
Right.
The officer says, why are you shooting me? He goes, cause you ran to get something. You told me to get my wallet.
Yeah.
You didn't say go slowly get my wallet. Why would a man who's 50 years old want to not hurry up and make the cop happy?
Mm-hmm.
So imagine how many other black men are dead right now because their cop could shoot better. I mean, think about it. This cop just couldn't shoot good. He shot him in the ass like three times.
Right.
But this cop was really good at shooting, man.
Yeah.
This is one of the dead black guys who are hurry up and complying.
That's right.
I remember I was down south of Virginia. A police officer pulled me over and, I had a girl in the car and, we're going to the movies. A police officer pulled me over and I, pulled over immediately. I went through a yellow. Apparently our lights in America should be red, red, green.
Right, right. Yellow is red. Yellow is red.
I can't just have two reds. Like,
I agree.
You know, you're still jacked up. You're still going to get a ticket.
That's right.
No,
that's right.
Double red. I mean, don't fake us out with a yellow. It's not real. So I go through the yellow light. Officer pulls me over and says, what'd you put under your seat? I said, excuse me? He goes, what did you put under your seat? And I said, I didn't put anything under my seat. He said, I'm not going to ask you again. Now, mind you, at the time I was 21, I was a private investigator and I was an armed private investigator.
Right.
At this particular time, I did not have a gun on me. And, he goes, what did you put under your seat? This cop is like 1 year older than me.
Right.
He must be like 22. I'm like, dude, you're yelling at me. He goes, don't make me pull you out of this car. I said, sir, I didn't put anything under my seat. He goes, you know what? Get up. So this kid pulls me out of the car, right?
Right.
Now I'm in front of a girl. Now a weaker man might have had a problem with this.
Right.
I'm with a female that I'm going to date with and another guy my same age is yelling and embarrassing me, talking shit to my face in front of a female. A weaker man might respond right now.
Yeah.
I've been training in martial arts. This officer would not be able to defend himself against me under any condition.
Okay.
There would be no way he could defend himself. So clearly I'm a good guy.
Right.
Right? This guy is pulling me out of a car, standing me there with no handcuffs on. So he didn't secure me. He just sat there.
Wow.
Puts his head under my seat.
Oh, wow.
His gun is right next to me. Both of his hands are away from his gun.
Right.
Like, okay, so if I am a bad guy, let's say I did decide to put a gun under a seat and I was a bad guy. Why would you then give me your gun side
right.
and both your hands firmly away from your gun? So just the ignorance is ridiculous. Anyway, so the kid cop looks under there, sees no gun. He goes, well, I saw you do something. I said, sir, I was sitting up in my seat out of respect for you when you pulled me over. My seat was leaning back. So you must have saw me lean forward, pull the back of the seat forward, and sit up in respect for the fact that I'm being pulled over by the police.
Right.
He thought that I put something under my seat because I sat up in respect.
Well, they're conditioned. They're conditioned to think that way, though. You know, I mean, that's really what the problem comes down to is that everybody is conditioned in this country at this point.
Listen, it's worse than that. I'll break it down for you in 2 seconds. But let me say this: that cop was at least an honorable police officer.
Yeah.
He said, "You know what? I was wrong. You deserve a ticket. You know, you went through a yellow." I said, "Oh, you get a ticket for going through yellow?"
Right.
I'm not going to say I wasn't going through yellow because I know for a fact I was. I just think that's wrong.
Yes.
I think that not you are wrong. I just think that the situation is wrong because we should have double reds. But, yes, I definitely went through the yellow light. He goes, well, you know, because I was wrong, you know, and, you know, you didn't lie to me or anything. I will not give you a ticket. I said, fair enough. You know, cause he did disrespect me. The way he was speaking, he was very disrespectful. And at least he had honor. He had this police officer had honor. He was an honorable kid.
Right.
But he really was like 22 years old.
Well, and that's nice too though, because a lot of times these guys will get themselves into a pickle like that and then have no excuse but to escalate the situation or, you know, try and arrest you for resisting arrest or something silly like that, you know.
Right. Well, let me say this. Let's be just really clear about this. The police officers have in America are required to have 5.5 months of training. An EMT has to have double that.
Really?
A barber has to have 4 times that.
No, come on. Really?
A paramedic has to have 2 years of training, not 5.5 months.
Right.
So when you talk about the fact that police officers are doing this or they're doing that, even the timetable's wrong for any type of expertise to take place. So right. It's like setting up the police officers to fail, which is setting up society to fail. The person who's going to decide whether you're reaching for a pill bottle in your pocket or reaching or not reaching or whether you're complying or not complying has less than 6 months of training before he's given a gun and the authority to kill at will based on feelings.
Yes.
He developed in training in less than 6 months.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That is a setup. You're setting the police officer up for complete and utter failure.
Wow. All right.
So it's fair to the officer for us to put him in those positions. You're saying, I'm going to give you the authority of God, and then I'm going to give it to you with less than 6 months of training and no interpersonal psychological training to keep you in under control, to give you a lot of, I mean, because think about it. This person is going to have to make decisions based on their feelings.
Yeah, instinct. On an instant basis, yeah.
But you hope it's not instinct, because instincts are predatory, right?
So right, okay.
There'll be a lot of killing.
Right.
I mean, you imagine the doctor's like, I'm going to cut your leg off, not because of x-ray.
Right now.
I'm going to cut it off for instincts.
Okay, that was the wrong word used. Ladies and gentlemen, we got to go to a 3-minute break. I don't want to interrupt you, Dale. I'm sorry. We're going to get cut off by the break here. Please, everybody, go to the Detroit Threat Management Center.com. I'm sorry, threatmanagementcenter.com. We're going to come back. We got a lot more discussion. That's going to go on between myself and Commander Dale Brown. Please be in the chat room as well if you guys.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply. Your future looks really great. I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
Here at MyPatriotSupply.com, our customers are number one. Built on a self-sustaining business model, we don't owe our existence to big banks or big business. Instead, the company was built by you, the customer. The success of My Patriot Supply is a testimony to the loyalty and dedication of each and every one of you, to our old-fashioned values and top-rated customer service. These elements alone have made us the number one choice of patriots everywhere. We believe that being prepared should not be a luxury reserved by people with large disposable incomes, which is why we have the products you need at the prices you can afford. We bring you our Patriot Pantry brand of storable food, which features top-of-the-line flavors and carefully packed to store for 25 years. Plus water purification systems, non-GMO heirloom seeds, survival gear, and much, much more. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Evil contains within it the seed of its own destruction.
Truth Warrior with David Whitehead. Mondays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thanks to all of you guys who are in the chat room. I do want to recommend again that people go to threatmanagementcenter.com and you can check out everything that you would want to know about what they're doing there in Detroit and everything that Dale has been talking about today. I also want to point out that Commander Dale Brown will also be the keynote speaker at the Liberty Rising Washington Dinner, which is in the Southside Oroville Community Center in Oroville, California on March 19th. He'll be speaking from 5:30 to 9:30 Pacific Standard Time. For more information on that, you can contact Sean Worthington at Liberty Rising Butte. His email is sean@libertyrisingbutte.com, or you can give him a call at 530-809-2647, or you can also visit the Facebook page for Liberty Rising Butte and learn more about this whole speaking engagement that Dale Brown's going to be a part of there. And I would highly recommend, if you're in California, go see this man talk, because this is very inspirational and influential information here. And Dale, before the break, we were kind of talking about just how crazy regular law enforcement officers can be sometimes, and we had talked a little bit over the break about this story that broke over the weekend of the law enforcement officer who was apparently in fear for his life because there was a rampaging pony on the loose. So the law enforcement officer took it upon himself to go ahead and destroy that pony's life and probably the love of some 6-year-old girl out there because of her pony. So I guess I have to ask Dale the devil's advocate question here, and I'll keep the time frame short so it's not going to require too much thinking, but just say in the last week or so, how many unarmed civilians or the farmyard animals or pets have you or your officers had to terminate, sir?
That would be absolutely none.
Oh, well, that's a change.
I even have a video of one of my men being chased by a cockapoo or something. To ensure that we don't hurt the cockapoo, my guy decided to run from it because there's nothing wrong with running from someone's small pet.
Right.
There's really something inherently wrong with me trying to explain how my team member stomped this, 7-pound puppy or dog in the dirt because my guy was scared of it. So, you know, very disgusting. We have never, we even had Nikita have 4 of us on top of a desk in a room one time. 6-month-old Akita.
Woo, those are mean. My cousin has 2 of those. And for folks who don't know, those dogs were bred in China to kill bears. That's what those dogs are for.
and it could have killed vipers, but we were on top of these desks. four men who have guns that could shoot the dog. We decided not to shoot the dog. They called someone that could control the dog. They came, got the dog, and we saved the dog's life.
Right.
From us. Because it really comes down to your philosophy. I've had to run from situations physically where I'm faced off with a non-combatant who thinks they are one.
Okay. So,
a teenager that wants to fight, an old lady that wants to fight, a homeless person that wants to fight.
Right.
I will run and spring out to a sprint in a minute to not fight a homeless person.
Right. Okay.
I am not going to beat up somebody's daughter because this teenage girl is out of hand and wants to get aggressive. I mean, have I had to physically move a girl before? Yes. Have I had to physically restrain them? Yes. Take them into custody? Yes. But I've also had to evade because it was not, I didn't have, there was nothing to win. There was right. No reason to put my hands on them that I could, that I could say was necessary. And so if it's not necessary, meaning to protect someone's life, then my pride has to go.
Right.
And you have to swallow your pride to keep it moving. If you're going to protect people, and this is one of the problems with police officers who work for me, and I've hired over 100 police officers in the past 20 years who work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And these are under threat conditions in Detroit, the conditions where we deal with a lot of violence. Back in the first 10 years was constant violence. Now, whenever we show up somewhere, people just stop being violent altogether. It's just very peaceful. But there was a time period where people didn't believe in it and they would attack us in large groups. And we dominated them as a group, and I used regular people, and I have special forces, I have regular guys and girls that, you know, were just trained constantly. We trained constantly, like as much as a football team, which is a ridiculous amount
right.
compared to law enforcement or security of any type. That's 2 to 3 hours a day of training, 7 days a week, okay? That's an incredible amount of training in protective service. Nobody does that. And now we still, average about 10 hours a week of training. Nobody does 10 hours a week of training. That's like unbelievable. It's just uncharacteristic of protective service. But that's how I get the confidence from my team members to be able to go into a situation that's dangerous and not be, overridden with fear and begin to become, gun dependent, thinking their gun is the answer. When their skill is the answer and the confidence to use your skill instead of your gun comes from the fact that you actually believe in your training, which can only happen if you constantly train.
Yes.
Otherwise, so you're prone to fear and you're going to be using guns to solve problems like ponies.
Exactly.
I had to get a snake out of a lady's house because her boyfriend, she broke up with her boyfriend, so he got mad. So he let his big snake go in her house. And I'm not a snakeologist.
A snakeologist, right. I wouldn't be either.
I'm not a snakeologist, but look, if this was my sister, if this was my mom, if this was my daughter.
Right.
I want someone to do for them with a big ass snake in the house. I would want this man to step up and protect my family.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I went in there, I got the damn snake, and I just got it done. But I look at it like family, so I train my staff. We are not workers. We are not workers. You cannot use workers to protect human life. When I went to Hurricane Katrina, I took a team down there the first weekend that Hurricane Katrina happened.
Right.
Now all of a sudden you hear about all these police officers getting prosecuted for all kinds of mayhem down there. One officer just got prosecuted, he got 27 years because he put flares in a car to burn the body of a guy another police officer shot and killed.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And, that's after they beat his family and handcuffed his family for trying to get help for their family member that was bleeding from getting shot by the police officer from his AR-15.
Right.
So, when we were down there, it was just total mayhem. And what you got was you got your locals that didn't want anybody doing anything that wasn't from around there.
Mm-hmm.
And they mean from their community. So, then you had the feds came in there and they were discombobulated because this is not something they usually deal with. And they don't know each other. They're not team members.
Right.
They come together as professionals trained in, response to, disasters. And right now they're just getting to know each other's names.
Right.
And so imagine a football team doing that. Oh, that's right. We did have that. Uzbekistan beat us in the Olympics, and we had the best people in the world. And the only thing that Uzbekistan had over us, people that couldn't even spell basketball, beat Americans at basketball.
Right.
Which includes Shaquille O'Neal and all the best basketball players we had at the time. Mm-hmm. How is it possible? Because without team cohesion, you can't develop what's necessary, what we call coalescence, in order to come together and be able to work fluidly, seamlessly, towards the same goal. And so when it comes to police officers and fear, what's causing their fear is the lack of known options and knowledge.
Right.
And this is creating the fear in the officer because they don't know. And it's a setup. We're literally setting them up. We're saying, you know, go into this room, go into the house, go down there, go in the backyard. You don't know what's there. You don't know how many people are there. You don't know what weapons are there. Special forces, they do a lot of intel work before they go anywhere near any objective.
Right.
They don't just go places, but suddenly you send police officers at any time of day or night into any kind of building they've never been in, and you don't even train them for that actual thing. So I know two dead police officers personally. Both of them worked for me for a short period of time. One of them was a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. But both of them spent more time in the gym lifting weights than they would ever spend doing tactics. One guy told me flat out, he doesn't mind the fact that I pay him $50 an hour, which is more than he gets as a police officer, of course. So I'm paying him $50 an hour, and he says, but I don't need your training because I have training. Ooh. From tactical services section.
Right.
I said, well, he said, I got 14 lawsuits in one fight. That's how good I am. I said, well, I've been around 14 years. At the time, I'd only been around 14 years. I said, I've been around for 14 years. I don't have one lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to keep it that way because I'm not going to have people like you running around putting me at risk.
That's right. Was that his last day on the job?
That was.
Yeah, I figured just that. I want to ask about your recruitment, though, if I can, though. You know, you're talking about bringing in law enforcement officers and training them, bringing them into the fold. But is this inherent fear that they have, or the lack of quality training? Is that kind of your biggest constraint with bringing them in? Or I guess another way to ask the question would be, do you prefer to bring in people with law enforcement training? Do you prefer to bring in ex-military guys, or would you rather just have somebody altruistic, fresh off the street that wants to go out and make a change in their community?
A good protector is someone who first and foremost loves people.
Okay.
A good person is someone who can do sales, because what we're selling is peace.
Right.
So you have to be a good communicator. So the three most important things are, number one, you have to love humanity. You have to love all people like family.
Right.
That's number one. That's the most important tool of a protector. Number two, you have to be selfless. You have to be willing to put yourself at risk. You have to be a person who does not who has strong belief in being mission driven and willing to put themselves at risk for others.
Mm-hmm.
And, number three, you gotta be willing to work hard to know what to do and when to do it the right way and be willing to practice your skill craft. And those things, I was not able to find police officers like that. I found some nice ones. One of my guys, a police officer, a really funny guy, comedian. And he died standing in the fatal funnel.
Oh, man.
Just standing right in front of the door. I mean, mm-hmm. He's 6'6", veteran, sergeant. You know, we used to joke about him getting killed all the time between two friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, I know, Brown. I got to go to training because I'll get killed. I know. You know, you hurt my knees, man. You hurt my knees. He could bench press like 500 pounds.
Right.
another cop who died broke one of our basic rules. One is none, two is one, and three is the key to safety. He's working in a nightclub by himself, not for me, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And he got killed because he grabbed the wrist instead of the gun of an aggressor who was coming to shoot him. And the person was able to drop back, elongate, and shoot him in the chest.
Oh, wow.
And so right under his armpit, going right past the vest. So both those deaths were attributed to lack of training.
Mm-hmm.
And, we second guess all the time. When we screw up, we go over it and we train it out. I also do lots of tests and scenarios, things they never do in law enforcement. You have to do, they almost never do this in law enforcement. In order for you to verify the quality of any organization or situation, you have to do quality control testing. blind testing, double blind testing. And then you got to make the results known. So I have a video. I have a drill, a simulation drill that's with humanoid, with humans, that actually tells us a score. So you can see your decision making ability, discernment, your ability to decide what to shoot, when to shoot, and whether you should be using a different weapon based on distance. And law enforcement officers are completely confounded by this.
Right.
Let's do mock traffic stops, not training to win. We've also done multiple anti-terrorism trainings with law enforcement here through FEMA, where my men pose as terrorists. And it's horrible the way they're training law enforcement officers in general. They call it training to win. And what they wanted, what they've always required us to do is to wait 3 seconds before we shoot the police officers coming in the room.
Okay.
They say it because that way the police officers don't feel, like the, it doesn't, you know, break their morale. If you're coming through a door stacked in a group, you're going to get shot and they need to know that ahead of time.
I'm not even going to wait for the door to open before I start shooting if I'm a bad guy. I mean.
Right, how about that? How about that? I haven't talked about that, but that does happen. There's been cases in Detroit where police officers are outside the door. They shoot with an AK-47 through the wall.
Yeah.
And shoot the officers.
Yeah.
And do you really think those guys wouldn't come out if you said, put the guns down, come outside? Would. You could literally tell those guys, put the guns down, come outside.
Right.
They know they're not going to go out in the blaze of glory. They're trying to get girls and money.
Yeah.
If they wanted to kill cops, the cops are driving around in cars with lights on top. They don't want to kill cops. They want to kill other drug dealers and get money to get more girls. This is a very simple thing. Girls, money, power, and power to get more money and girls. That's it. It's very simple.
I know. It's just simple psychology, though. You know, I mean, it is simple psychology.
These guys go up. I deal with a lot of youth organizations. They're like, so we're telling young men to stop it with the guns. Really? And what are you offering them instead?
Right.
Now, when they get the guns, they get girls. They get respect.
Right.
People leave them alone. Mm-hmm. Nobody kills them. If you haven't noticed, you never see a little black guy outlined in any city with an outline of his hand and a gun in the hand. Only dead black are running around with no gun.
Exactly.
So they've decided they like to live, some of these African-American boys, and they went and got guns to keep themselves alive. It seems to be working pretty well for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you notice, the police officers are also shooting the unarmed African-American boys. That's interesting, isn't it?
Oh, it's sad. It's tragic is what it is, man.
Well, right. I mean, think about it. There's got to be a bunch of African-American boys with guns, but somehow they're not getting killed by cops or by criminals. It's like they have some kind of secret code to use so they don't get up in a situation.
Huh.
It's weird, isn't it? Like, how's that possible? How could all these black boys have no guns? And the truth is this. It's even worse than you could ever imagine. The reality is, the opportunity exists because there is no other gun. If there was another gun, it makes you think twice before shooting. It's like knowing someone's going to punch you in the nose. If you punch them, a bully, even if they know they can beat the other person, doesn't want to get punched in the nose, not even one time.
That's right.
So if they know they're going to get punched, if it's even if it's a female, and the last time he beat his wife or beat his girlfriend or, you know, last time it hurt, guess what? And try to figure out some other way without going to the highest level of force. And what I found in many different municipalities is that often if law enforcement officers knew there was going to be a collateral price, they walked a little bit lighter.
Right. Well, and that's the difference between somebody who understands that their job is to make sure that the people go home, that the people who are there protecting go home and not that they go home, you know. I mean, that's the big difference that I see between right. your training and then regular law enforcement.
Well, in our case, and that's where, you know, it's very important to differentiate. Mm-hmm. We are not law enforcers. We are threat managers. We manage threats. So if a person's over there smoking marijuana, the only threat that we have from them is them drifting out into the street. If there's a drunk person over there, the only threat we have is that they might drift out into the street, get hit by a car, or start operating a car. So, I mean, One case where, and this is our standard procedure, guy crashed his car. His car is still mobile, but he's discombobulated. I go over to this guy. He's a, looks like he's probably a, suburban, professional, blonde hair, blue eyed guy, maybe 30 years old. And, I pull up to him and I have to call the police because I'm on duty. Uh-huh. So I had a car crash. So he crashed into something. I don't know what he crashed into because whatever he crashed into is not apparently here. But the car's still running. I said, "Hey, how you doing, sir?" Look, his airbags are deployed. I said, "Hey, why don't you turn the car off so you can hear me?" So, "Sir, I can't hear you." So he turns the car off. I said, "Hey, listen, something happened." He was like, slurring his words.
Right.
I said, "Okay, let me see your keys for a second." So he gives me his keys and I put him in the back seat behind the headrest, right?
He escalated, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
So I didn't take his keys into my possession.
Right.
I simply transferred the keys to the back of the car. When the officers arrived, they said, "Why'd you move the keys?" I said, "I can't have this guy take off, drive down the street, and crash into someone. Could be crashing into a police officer and kill them."
Right.
How would I feel if this guy took off in the car, crashed into some cops, killed cops or families in the area?
Right.
And so I did my part. I stopped him from doing that and I called his mom and she came actually when the police got there, they said, "Well, you ruined our case."
Yeah, we're going to get some money off of this, man.
They were like, "No, this won't get the prosecution."
Yeah.
See, cause remember the police officers don't get anything up here in the north. Down south, they actually get a percentage of the money. Here up north in Detroit, the police officers don't get a dime, dollar. In fact, and this is one of their big complaints here, they do all this work getting all this secondary money out of people's pockets, and then they still cut their pay. And so to get revenge, the Detroit police decided not to do a lot of extra work, and that actually made people very happy.
Hmm.
So, yeah, there's also been something called the blue flu. You know what that is?
No. Uh-uh.
That's where if you piss off police here, they, all call off.
Kind of like, what happened in New York where they basically, when, after the Gardner thing came down and they just decided, yeah, like work stoppage basically.
Yes. And people got really happy.
Yeah.
Listen, in Detroit, they didn't get happy. You want to know why? No one ever knew.
Oh, really?
No one ever knew.
Huh.
There was literally no difference between a blue flu and a non-blue flu day.
Wow.
So to this day, you can't say what day the blue flu took place.
Wow.
Yeah, that's funny. Because what they don't realize is that the only way the blue flu would have mattered to the citizens is if you were already showing up quickly.
Right. Yeah, if it was a change of guard, so to speak.
Right. We've had 6 people on our staff shot. The number of people arrested for shooting us is 0. The number of people questioned for shooting us, and there's witnesses. There are witnesses in every one of our shootings where our staff members were shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's one female, 5 men on my staff have been shot. We transport to level 1 trauma hospital, so none of them are dead. And to this day, no one's ever been questioned, arrested, or otherwise taken into custody over shooting us. Not once.
That's unbelievable. I mean, that's hard to believe, really.
Yeah, well, I thought it was that way until, you know, this is, you know, early on, let's say between 95 and 2000. People stopped shooting at us, around that time period. But I remember like hearing a story from a police officer was like, "Man, you guys are awesome." He said, "I saw your guys deploy rifles and shotguns on these guys. These gang members came out of this place one time and blah, blah, blah." And I remember thinking, why didn't you help us?
Right.
Why were you sitting in the car and you didn't get out and help us in the shootout?
Yeah.
And, I didn't say that to the officer, of course. I just said, you know, maybe he just didn't feel like that was a situation where, I still don't understand this day. But, you know, at first I took it personal, but the truth, a common thing, there's apparently, a lot of shootings here in Detroit and, there's not a lot of, closure.
Not a lot of follow up.
Apparently. Well, one of the things you won't see is you won't see canvassing, during all kinds of crimes in the community that the communities we serve now, which is constantly expanding, by the way. It turns out that, people across this country and even in other countries are contacting us because what they want is the same thing we created here in Detroit, which people consider dystopia. They want to know, how did you create in Detroit a place where people feel safe? A judge was recently shot here. That judge was shot directly across the street from one of our communities we protect.
Ugh.
That community voted to not bring my organization, my company, into their community because they have an off-duty police officer.
Right.
A retired police officer that protects them, and they just wanted to use him. Okay, well, and then I said to them in 47 different ways. Getting mad at police officers is not in anyone's best interest, okay? Right. They're doing the best they can. You're not happy with a response-based program. You want a proactive, preemptive, protective program, and that's what we do. We don't let criminals get in position. We also don't violate their rights. When we see a person walking around a neighborhood, we go up and talk to them in a friendly tone. We record them on video, and they can record us, and they do. They start pulling out cameras, it's going to record us. Why are you recording me? And when they ask us why we're recording them, we say it's to make sure that we're being professional. It's required to show that we are treating people with respect. So that's why we're recording you, sir, ma'am. And then they go, okay, well, I'm recording you too sometimes. You know, the guy, right. Well, I'm recording you too. Yes, ma'am, that's a great idea. And every time you come across someone, the first thing you should do is start recording. So you can always show what you said and what they said, and it's completely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have no court dates. And that's why we have no accusations of mistreatment by people saying we mistreated them. We talk to people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's protecting homes. In the wealthy communities here, we have homes that range in size from a couple of our communities. They're 7 to 10,000 square feet are the average size homes.
Oh, wow.
And there's homes in there that's between 20 and one is even 50,000 square feet. And it's a house.
That's ginormous. I can't even imagine trying to protect a property that size.
Yeah, all these properties are surrounded by just incredible challenges to public safety. Put it like that.
Well, I'll tell you, man, again, you know, we're just about out of time today, but I do want to recommend people, again, check out threatmanagementcenter.com. And I would really highly recommend, tell us about this speaking engagement that you've got coming up, if you would, Commander.
Basically, this is in Butte, California. Mm-hmm. In what it is, a professor contacted me and said, listen, you know, we've been following you. We like what you're doing in Detroit. We'd like to have you come on here and talk about how we can do that in our community here.
Yes.
So it's about sustainable, public safety, not law enforcement. Law enforcement is the use of laws to enforce laws, which means people have to break the law. Mm-hmm. And anytime people break the law, your property values are going down and you're unhappy. What we want to say is this. Threat management is keeping laws from being broken by creating conditions where people don't feel like they can break the law and keeping it positive and safe without violence.
Man, that is so fantastic. Again, community-driven altruism, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Commander Brown, for being on the program today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. Take care out there. Good luck with everything that you're...
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.